Don't have time to read that research paper you saved? Chelsea and Olivia want to help you out. We know how it is. That's why we read it for you. Welcome to the Exercise Science Too Long Didn't Read podcast.
Hello.
What's up?
What's crack-a-lackin'?
Eggs.
Oh, tasty.
Sometimes. What do we have to discuss today?
Today we're going to talk about something with cardiac rehabilitation.
Your favorite.
It is. Near and dear to my heart. One of my favorite areas to work in. But we're going to talk about training protocols. So, you know, continuous exercise, HIIT training, like what is best? What do they like?
I'm really hoping HIIT training is not best. I do it. I don't enjoy it.
Well, this is for quality of life. So enjoyment is part of it.
Oh, good. See, so to be fair, I like things about it. I like that I can do it and have it be done with faster. So when I hit my alarm, snooze too many times, and now I'm short on time for my workout, but it's cardio day. Mm-hmm. I can do a HIIT and it's fine.
Yep.
We have a definition, not multiple, just a definition.
It's a quote from the paper.
It is a quote. Does that constitute a definition? We're going to say yes. It says, health-related quality of life can be viewed as the interplay of mental, social, and physical well-being. So clearly that's not Webster's dictionary definition of a thing. And since it came from the paper, I'm guessing that it is meant to kind of qualify or quantify something they were wanting to look at. So for mm-hmm. the purposes of this paper, health-related quality of life is the interplay of mental, social, and physical well-being. So how they all work together equals the whole.
Yeah. So this paper was by Schoenfelder, Oberreiter, Egger, Chenster, Dross, and Niebauer.
That sounds very Germanic.
I think it is. Forgive me, I am not familiar with German at all, so
I'm going to take a stab at it.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Schoenfelder, Oberreiter, Egger, possibly, it's T-S-C-H-E-N-T-S-C-H-E-R. So is the T silent? Is it Schencher? You tell us. And then, yeah, Dross or Droese. And then Niebauer. I think that's as close as either one of us is going to be able to get.
Yeah.
We did not take German. I took French in high school.
So the paper was published in 2021.
Excellent.
The title of the paper is...
People had a lot of time on their hands during quarantine. They were like, listen, I cannot complete my lab work. People be pushing papers out. Let's get some typing done. We've been putting it off. Let's just get it done.
Mm-hmm. So the title of the paper is Effect of Different Endurance Training Protocols During Cardiac Rehabilitation on Quality of Life. It was published in the American Journal of Medicine.
Hey, I've actually heard of that one.
Yeah, so that's good. The purpose of the study...
Sorry. The way you said that, you sounded like a vine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway... The purpose of the study was to see how continuous, pyramid, and high-intensity interval training methods affect health-related quality of life in outpatient cardiac rehab patients. Pretty straightforward.
Except that I have a follow-up definition question.
Okay.
Explain to me pyramid exercise.
Pyramid exercise is when
you... Is that cheerleading camp where you stack up into a pyramid? You're having to hold yourself up and everybody on top of you. I would consider that physically?
The best way I can describe it is, you know how whenever you're exercising on a cardio machine, how it will have that timeline with the bars that when you increase the intensity or the speed, the bars get higher?
Mm-hmm.
What you would want to make is a pyramid shape on that. Oh. So you increment.
Instead of doing intervals or something, you're kind of steadily increasing up. You get to a peak and then steadily mm-hmm. decreasing until you do your cool down.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So you incrementally increase.
I smell and then what you're stepping in. I gotcha.
Incrementally decrease.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get into the methods. How did they do this? What did they do? Who did they do it with? How many? All the things.
All the questions.
So the data collection occurred between November 2001 until February of 2013. So it's been a minute. But for context, that's, I can't math, what, 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
So over the course of 12 years, which is a pretty decent amount of time, I think.
Oh, yeah.
All the patients had what was considered as stable coronary artery disease. Participants were randomly assigned by gender to be in the continuous, hit, or pyramid spinal. I cannot say human words anymore. Participants were randomly assigned by gender to be in the continuous, hit, or pyramid style training protocols. They attended 18 sessions that included resistance training at each session. And nice. Each participant completed the MACNU heart disease, health-related quality of life, and the hospital anxiety and depression scale questionnaire. That's a lot of words. But they did that big old long questionnaire thingy both pre and post treatment. So we'll get into it, but I'm guessing that the questionnaire is a lot of sort of how do you feel if we're talking about quality of life, you know, mm-hmm. those types of questions. So we're gauging how did they feel about their quality of life before they did all of this, and then how do they feel after? Is that accurate?
Pretty much, yeah.
Excellent.
You've got it.
So it says they attended 18 sessions that included resistance training at each session, but so they were randomly assigned by gender to be in each class. So each individual person was only doing one type of class?
Yes.
And that was assigned by gender, so they weren't mixed? Or did we have boy hit and girl hit?
Boy hit and girl hit.
Okay.
Yeah. So what they tried to do is evenly distribute the genders between the groups.
Oh, but the classes themselves were likely co-ed.
Yes.
Mix and mingle. Okay.
Yeah.
I was getting very confused by their parameters.
Understandable.
So what did they find?
There were 66 patients that were enrolled in the study. 60 participants ended up completing the study just because, you know, people don't complete surveys or they drop out and, you know.
Rude.
But
you had one thing. It's a piece of paper. I'm just kidding. I'm like terrible about remembering to do things.
People that don't turn in homework assignments.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Yeah.
Only because, listen, I did not know I had ADHD. And I would be at my locker going, what books do I need to bring home tonight? What homework did I have? And inevitably, I would bring the wrong one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get to school the next day and my friend would be like, how'd you do on the math homework? And I'd say, what math homework? So I'm familiar with the concept.
Understandable.
So we've got people not doing their jobs.
And we have, it's interesting. All three training styles had significant increases in work capacity. Makes sense.
What's work capacity?
Work capacity is their ability to do work or perform the exercise.
Oh, so kind of just checking a box, can you do this, yes or no?
Oh, like increasing their intensity and their time.
Oh. So maybe when I first started working out and it was really hard and so I stopped doing the 45-minute one and I just did the 20-minute one. And then after a while, I tried the 45-minute one again and I was able to make it through it?
Yes. Excellent. So you increased your work capacity.
Excellent. Now I can impress my friends at parties.
Yay. We like impressing our friends at parties.
Oh my God, I miss parties.
Work capacity by percentage for the groups. Continuous exercise training group increased by 21.1%. The high intensity interval training group increased by 22.8%. And the pyramid training group increased by 24.8%. So the pyramid training group increased the work capacity the most. And there was no significant differences between the three groups because they were all close together. But
yeah, 20% doesn't seem very high, especially for, we said this was a 12-year period.
It's 12 years of data collection, not 12 years of them exercising.
Oh, because I was going to be very impressed that, I mean, I've been much more consistent this last year and a half, but I have not been consistent for 12 years. I was about to be very impressed with these people.
Me either.
So, and 20%, I mean, it's significant. It's something. But yeah, it doesn't seem like a lot.
18 sessions over, I mean, 3 times a week, 18 sessions. That's like 3 months.
Oh, it was 18. That's right.
Yeah. No, wait, 18.
No, that's, yeah, 9. I mean, if it's 9 weeks, it's right about 2 months. Some months have 4 weeks, some months have 5. So,
that's true. So, 46 participants completed both the pre and post questionnaires.
Good job.
Yeah.
Gold star. Thank you for your service.
All three.
To the study.
All three protocols showed significant improvements from pre to post for both questionnaires. So, they increased their quality of life and they decreased their anxiety, which is good.
Listen, we all could use some of that. 2 heaping spoonfuls, please.
Yes. Okay, so this is where this paper gets really interesting. So the MAC...
Strap in.
The MAC New paper questionnaire ends up with 4 categories of results. You have your categories of emotional, physical, social, and global. Okay, so the MAC New had significant increases in all 4 of the categories, but when they broke it down into groups, the exercise groups, continuous exercises, had a significant increase in physical and social. HIIT had an increase in physical, social, and global. And then Pyramid had a significant increase in all 4 of the categories. So Pyramid style not only increased more areas or categories of the MAC New, but it also increased a higher percentage in work capacity.
Interesting.
I think so. Especially with all the research with HIIT, people think, you know, HIIT's the golden child. So it's interesting that they're showing these results.
Yeah, because, you know, they tell you that you burn more calories longer after the workout and just all of these after effects that can be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
So were they lying?
Who?
The people that told me that HIIT burns more calories?
No.
Okay, good.
No, they weren't lying.
It just means it's not going to make me feel better mentally.
Right. It's not going to increase your quality of life as much. I mean, it will, but just not as much.
Okay, fair.
Anxiety and depression scores improved across the board, but the only significant changes were with HIIT and depression, and then pyramid style with anxiety.
You know what I like about this? It's kind of like whatever the positive equivalent of pick your poison is.
A little bit.
Ooh, I've got it. It's like going to one of those frozen yogurt bars and you get your ice cream flavor. And then it's whatever you feel like putting toppings on it that day.
Very true.
So if you're prone to depression, you can do HIIT. If you're prone to anxiety or even just having an anxious period in your life, switch up your exercise routine. Plus, it's good for that variety. You know, it's good to change things up every now and then. Anyway, being able to change things up helps to begin with. but also being able to change things up, knowing it's going to have a specific benefit that you're looking for, I think is even better.
Definitely.
I'm curious, like, what types of classes they did. Like, for continuous and pyramid, were they on a treadmill? Were they doing water aerobics? Were they just walking?
Well, typical cardiac rehab is going to have, you know, your bike, your new step, your elliptical, and your treadmill. So the standard cardio equipment that you would have in a gym. And the continuous exercise would probably be like 30, 45 minutes of a continuous speed and intensity.
Okay. That does level the playing field a bit, because I was thinking, you know, if you're outside going for a walk, you're going to get probably a little bit more of a boost than someone who's stuck inside in the gym.
Yeah.
And definitely. I like that their classes, I think that by itself could probably boost the social aspect too.
Definitely.
I mean, not everybody likes to work out in front of other people. It can be very anxiety provoking as well. But that's why we do pyramid style, right?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Since all three training styles increase the work capacity and improves the quality of life in patients, the patient should be able to choose their preferred method. That's what the authors were saying. So,
oh, good. They agree with me.
Yeah. So excellent. Cardiac rehab should have options for their patients on what they would prefer to exercise with.
Do they not today, typically?
They did not, in my experience with the programs that I've worked with.
That's a shame.
Yeah. They might in other programs.
Hmm.
But that's something that programs can look at if they're not doing that.
Or at least maybe have some sort of a questionnaire when you get a patient who's new coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And it has questions around this kind of stuff. Like, okay, we realize you're here for cardiac rehab, but without going into detail, maybe give us some scores in these areas of your life.
Yeah.
And then the provider themselves, the trainer, the whoever, can take that information and it's more of a customized experience.
That would be good. I mean, whenever I worked in cardiac rehab, we tried to customize it as much as we could to the person, but getting to know what they like and what they dislike from the get-go would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Extra questions. Mm-hmm. Are you somebody that hates the bike or do you hate the treadmill? Because if that's what I'm going to make you do all the time, you're probably not going to come back.
That's true.
Getting people to go.
Patients will communicate that to you most of the time. But yeah.
Well, we live in an area that is stereotypically polite. So you do get into situations where people don't want to hurt your feelings. They're mm-hmm. maybe not comfortable expressing their wishes, things like that. And so they would rather just keep quiet. And so I think here's my pitch to all of you. What's the job title? Exercise physiologist?
Yes.
Okay. Here's my pitch to all of you exercise physiologists out there. I'm going to need you to get on it now so this is set up and ready to go by the time I reach this age bracket. Let's have this questionnaire. Let's talk to our people. If they don't want to talk, they can fill it out on a form, mm-hmm. online, whatever. We ask them what kind of exercise they enjoy, what kind they don't, what have they done before, what have they heard of but not done. And then, I don't know, maybe throw in this MacNew thing. It seems to be pretty well-rounded and decent. Mm-hmm. So, or pick and choose some questions from there. Like, what do you struggle most with? Do you struggle, or outright ask, do you struggle with anxiety and depression separately? And what's some of the other stuff on here?
Social, global, emotional.
I mean, we know you're here for physical, so
mm-hmm.
check. I'm not sure how we'd probably have to look at the questionnaire to know how the questions around social and global were worded. So just global, is that just all encompassing or is that like the earth?
I am not sure. I assume it's your relationship with the world around you, maybe, like environmental, maybe.
That's what I was trying to figure out. Is it that or these questions of let's think about everything holistically and not specific to one area?
Maybe.
So it's physical and social and emotional and just all combined.
I'm not sure.
Like making yourself give yourself an average score. Interesting. If you guys know, let us know.
Yeah.
Shoot us a email or we're on the Instagram mostly. We're on the TikTok. We're on the Facebook.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the Exercise Science TLDR podcast show. If you want to hear more from us, please write a review and subscribe. Join us online at exerciscienctldr.com. Remember, if it's too long and you didn't read it, we read it so you don't have to.